We've had plenty of bad ones. I mean, you know, we've had our share of technical difficulties in the past.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise, everybody. Yes, we're back on time and on target. Glad to hear it. We had some rough technical issues, but thanks to Derek Coward, head of the Deliberate Noise Network, for getting those ones and zeros in order. This episode of Indie Comic Book Noise, boy, we're really getting up there in numbers, gentlemen. I have two co-hosts today, our regular two Canadian buddies, but this will be episode 536. 536? Oh, I mean, we weren't on all of them, but that ain't nothing.
No, but we did a good amount, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've done the most out of that. How many? The lion's share. I don't have the numbers.
Like 100?
No, way more than that. But I think we've done in the ballpark of 300, give or take. Geez. So we've been busy little beavers. And that's my intro for the Ottawa Otter. Say hi, Phil.
Hello.
And then also up north joining him is WRX Kev. Say hi, Kev.
Well, if you ever want to kill the podcast again, just have us do something like 8 Balls.
And Super Steve in the bunker was not able to join us today, which is always sad, but Super Steve has a lot of Super Steve business. And, you know, that takes priority over other stuff. But we hope to have him on again.
When he becomes Red Super Steve and he gets that mustache, that's a problem.
Yes. Well, oh, sorry, Phil. I meant... We've done over 200, not over 300.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Andrew. That was supposed to be a DC reference. Were you referring to Barry Allen earlier?
No. Actually, I don't really know, Phil, because we also did a bunch of Point One episodes. And... Yeah. So for sure, yes, over 200. How many? I don't know. I mean...
And you guys haven't kicked me off in this long? That's bad.
I thought... The points were a good idea. But Deliberate Indie Comic Book Noise, part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You know, you can find old shows and show notes at our website, indiecomicbooknoise.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook. You can find some of the hosts there. As you heard from the warning at the beginning, there is strong language from time to time and adult themes. I always like to say we never say anything controversial. Sometimes
no, but Kevin gets passionate sometimes and he gets a little potty mouth.
This is the thing. Because, Andrew, you put me on the spot last time. So I made sure when something came up within the last week or two that I'm like, oh, that could be good for controversial that we might or might not agree with. So I made sure to write it down. So I have 3 or 4 right now.
Okay. Well, good to hear it. Glad we'll have those in reserve should we need them. But I just said we never say anything controversial, Kevin.
Almost. You said something like almost.
I mean, the most recent one was kind of funny because of the preamble before you started recording. You said something, and I'm like, that kind of works in with one of the controversial statements. So I was like, that was funny.
Are you going to share it with the listeners?
Yeah, no, I didn't know if you wanted to get out of this dip because it sounded like you were ambling away. You're like, I don't want to deal with that.
Well, I was, but if you want to lay it on the line, go for it.
It's better be good, Kevin, though.
Well, one of these bits was, it's great that people are on other sites where they don't post and everyone can access it.
And that's our controversy for this episode. Indie Comic Book Noise is a free-flowing discussion about everything independently comic booky and noisy. We can talk about media adaptations, sometimes news, although given our show posting schedule, those news segments quickly turned to history.
The old news, but
and as
I mean,
noted,
there was a lot of news at SDCC,
part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Thanks, Derek, again for everything. I need to start doing the intro in order because I keep forgetting if I've covered everything. We're just going to assume I have.
Yep.
And get right on to it. Do we want to talk about any of the news, Kevin?
Focus on the con, right?
Yeah. The big San Diego Comic-Con happened. Mm-hmm. Lots of news. Kevin's distillery publisher had a big panel.
Okay, they haven't heard any news from it at all.
Yeah, Distillery announced a bunch of titles and everything. Mm-hmm. Had a big...
Okay, I don't know that company. Distillery.
They haven't really launched yet, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, something's coming pretty soon because I pre-ordered their,
Something to watch out for.
Did they call it uncut? What was the thing? The prime cut?
And their gimmick is
the
they
devil's
don't...
cut? Was it the devil's cut?
They don't put vowels in the name of the company, and it's some of the Comixology people are behind it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, hey, more publishers. Hopefully that's good for the market. That's all I can say. I don't know. I know... You know, depending on who you talk to, it's either the comics are about to go out of business or it's the best time ever.
Comics have been going out of business since the first one.
It just goes up all the time, right? Probably.
Yeah. Oh, and also you never know what's localized. Like, I'm sure in some markets do better than others.
Yeah. Like, there's bad years, there's good years.
I mean, from selling comics, I can tell you it's the worst time because I'm doing the best ever.
I do think digital fucked it up a lot.
I don't know. It feels like digital...
Because, no, if there was no digital, everyone would be going to the store still, you know? Like,
I don't believe
that. It's just too easy to get comics everywhere else now, you know?
Everyone doesn't have access. Or people are too lazy or whatever. Like, there's always a percentage of... Like, people are using those same reasons for, like, going to the movies or whatever. Like, people are out at going to the movies now because of... this or that.
I'm trying to move to digital, Phil. It's hard. I really like paper.
I
know.
Me too. Like, I just don't... I find I read things too fast. I don't soak it in, you know?
Yeah. And there's the whole sitting down with a book or a comic or whatever.
Yeah, it just feels nicer, you know?
It's a whole... But I really... I mean, the space and the storage and I can't find half the crap I got
half the time. And that's the problem. And plus, digital is a good way to get comics you can't get anymore, too, you know?
Yeah, it just feels like it's an anchor, but it's still an anchor I enjoy. Well,
yeah,
also
I'm starting to realize with Kickstarters, maybe I just have to start getting digital versions, you know, at once. Just because it's so expensive. Like, the Six Gun one came out recently, the hardcovers for that. I just canceled my pledge. I think it ends tomorrow, but... Just because I'm like, it's I've already have this in issue form, you know, and it's too much.
Well, I'm
not new stuff.
I'm not gonna give the number, but when you told me what some of those shipping charges were, I was like, good gracious, I don't know.
Like, I did do one of though. Remember that horror comics I liked a lot from Afterlight? I kickstarted their most recent one. It was a good price.
Well, maybe it makes a difference if they're based in like the. East Coast, or you know, it's a shorter
that's UK
shipping
I think,
range.
For them.
Oh, wow!
Well, yeah, maybe. But it was like I think I paid like 26 for the hardcover. I want to say plus like $10 shipping. 15
oh my
shipping
gosh, $10 shipping is a drain.
It's probably like 15 or something like that, but yeah, it was very cheap. That's why I did it because I was like, this is what I wanted, and it's the collected version, and yeah, it was a very good price. It'd be like buying one at the bookstore, you know, or something.
You know what this means, Phil?
What's that?
You're gonna have to get into Canadian comics. That's what,
what do you mean?
That, you know, save on shipping. You're gonna have to be a huge Canadian comic
booster.
I don't
even know if there are Canadian comics anymore. Isn't Captain Canuck collecting dust again, or is he still around?
There's so many Canadian comics.
Waiting for the next company or whatever.
Well, Kevin,
they're individuals, not companies.
Kevin can hook you up with all the Michael DeForge you can eat.
Never heard. Isn't he
true.
In Star Trek?
No, Adventure Time.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know if you want all these blockbuster San Diego things where they're They were all.
Was there any indie comic news like over there? Like any, like besides that company?
Yeah, they had their stuff. Yeah, you know,
all
like
all of them have. There was a lot more detail on the. Kevin and I covered the new Kirkman Dark Energon Hasbro universe, and there were
Dark
more
Energon.
There were more announcements about those titles and books, and you know IDW. It's now Skybound does it, but Skybound and IDW usually have a good presence at the show. You know those like show exclusive.
Skybound
variants.
Is busy, man. They make board games. They do that. They make video games. Like,
I think it's really the Todd McFarlane model of like do every. You know, if you got the license, go out and execute every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't know if Todd McFarlane's like, Image is cool, but what if we have people buy in and contribute money to our company? And I'm like, wait, what? Remember that whole thing?
Oh,
that
you could be an investor in the Skybound thing. But I think too many people that run these things realize there's a lot of money to be had, whether it's some kind of limited securities offering, whether it's, you know, a Patreon, whatever it is. If you've got fans, you know, use that connection to have a way, you know, with the internet, you can have all these avenues that directly tap into your fans. I mean, I'm not going to be investing in any of these things. I did one that was like a bar distillery because they had a local branch and you could go in. And so I bought like one, the smallest amount possible, you know, like one share. Just so that way when I would go, it's, you know, you get a few perks if you are, you know, things at the bar. And they do a big blowout every year and that type of thing. But not as an investment, just as like, oh, it's kind of funny. You can say you're an owner when you go and that type of thing, but not ever expecting to make any money out of it. And that's how I would view these things, not as investments, but as, I think it's funny. I like Kirkman and his comics, so I'm going to buy a shirt. I mean, maybe someone will make money, but I have to think that if you're that investor, you're the lowest base level. You know, it's not like you're going to get a meeting with, well, I guess if you give enough money, you can meet with Kirkman, but it's not like you're going to be making decisions on the board.
Kirkman doesn't have like the same punch to it. You know, before I'd pick up anything he does, now it's like, oh, he still does stuff. Like,
He's still successful. Still.
I know he's successful, but I'm just like, I don't think of him anymore, really, you know, anymore. Where before anything he did, I'd buy any comic, you know.
Sorry, Kev, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just the investment thing doesn't strike me as like a pure Image concept thing. Like maybe if the thing was, hey, you invest in us and then you can put out your garbage basement stapled comic because that's the Image way. Like that would something tied into like getting out there and putting out indie comics and everything is more of like some crazy incentive tied to like their original ideal. Like that would be funny and a novelty.
I wondered if we're going to see more of Kirkman, because while it's still going, certainly the Walking Dead film and TV empire has slowed down. And while there's a strike on,
boring.
Like he can now really take that energy he was putting into that and, you know, do this Hasbro Dark Energon thing and a whole bunch of new.
Well, that I'm kind of excited for,
Yeah. Well, also it just, you know, he seems like a guy that puts in time, and that had to, being involved with those shows had to take up some of his time, so.
Well, plus that stuff he loves to begin with, because that's all like the toy properties and stuff you're talking about. Yeah, that's all stuff he loved originally, so I'm sure he's passionate into it, you know?
Yeah, fingers crossed. And lots of big toy announcements too, Phil, but those are always fun.
Yeah.
They had some announcements from like Boom Studios and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Had all the manga stuff and then all the like, hey, how are the vendors doing? You know, and they're asking like Silver Sprock and all those guys.
Well, they had a big Ito exhibit too. Speaking of Horror Master Mango. Right. They had a big, because I know some people that stopped by said it was really cool.
Oh, I love him. What was at the exhibit? Just like his work or something? Or?
Yeah, they had, you know those things. They usually have some original art and blow-ups of pictures and that type of thing. I mean, I didn't get to go. I did not go to Sandy. I haven't been in 5-6 years.
I've been reading a lot of his stuff lately, for sure.
But and he came to, and they brought him out to the show too, so you could go to his panel and that type of stuff. But again, I did not go. Wonder, for a while at the height of the pandemic, they were recording a lot of stuff. I don't know if they still are or not, but some of that stuff, maybe I'll have to look and put something in the show notes if I can find it.
No, I think some of that stuff has gone by the wayside now.
I used to like that when the cons were going on and they put out podcasts of the panels.
Yeah.
And I could listen to it that way. I used to love that.
Yeah, I know some people would just do that on their own and sort of like put it out on their private feed.
Well, like DC would do it, like one where they all put all their panels out, for example. I forget who else used to do it.
Well, I watched some. Well, I see Marvel does that on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can see theirs. And I watched a live stream of some of the Hasbro stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even bother this time. I don't know. It was weird not going to like the main like news websites again and having to. I mean, one of them's well known, but the other one is newish because, you know, the classic ones that used to have the boat cruises and all that columns and blogs and all that, you know, they're no longer doing that type of thing. So, and then Twitter was really great. Yeah, funny enough, the hell site that everyone wants to leave immediately was really helpful and informative and entertaining for seeing a lot of pictures and stuff that was going on. So that was good.
I followed along on Mastodon. There were some photos, but it's not the same as being there in the same way. But it is fun to see the photos and the exhibits, and you don't got to wait in line. So. Or wrestle the crowd, so to speak. It's still a busy show, despite the strike canceling a lot of stuff. It was still...
Yeah, I guess the Star Trek thing was probably the biggest, like, non-comic regular panel thing that went on from, like, that was Hollywood-ish.
But always interesting stuff there. But what sort of... Let's get on with some comics, gentlemen. Who's got a comic they want to talk about?
Well, it's not technically a comic. I mean, I think we used to call these OGMs back in the day.
It sounds like a comic to me.
It's a thicker comic.
Yeah, just
no,
a big
comic.
No, Andrew,
this is called a graphic novel. It is not a comic or a comic book. It's a comic. This is the most controversial statement. You're reading comics. It's a comic. It's comics. it's not more highbrow.
The controversy is whether you spell comics with an X or not, right, Kevin? That's where it comes in.
I mean, that X, as everyone has learned or should know, if they don't know, when that early internet age, I'm like, I'm Whirlwind. And it didn't take me long before, no, I'm Whirlwind X. Because I need that X there, because that's cool. And it's funny, as years have gone on, I'm not wrong, people still like that X.
Everyone loves the X. All right, so what book do you got for us, Kevin?
I have Night Fever. Do you know who this is by?
Night Fever. The Bee Gees. Right? Night Fever, late 70s. Maybe part of the Saturday Night Live soundtrack.
No.
Man, normally I put Summer Breeze at the end, but might have to do a little Night Fever.
Put a little Staying Alive there? Yeah. You know, referring to comics, you know, 100 years later, Staying Alive.
So who's Night Fever? Sounds like one of the guys that got kicked off the New Warriors.
Wow. It's from Image Comics. Does that help you?
No, never heard of him.
Okay. You ever hear of a guy called Ed Brubaker?
Nope. Wait, wasn't he in the movies? Yeah, he was in the movies.
Yes, he was.
Oh, these movie people doing comics again, Kevin. You are a sucker for it, aren't you?
And Sean Phillips and his son.
Well, got to keep it in the family.
Although, no credit. Like, is it weird that they have a credit in the back, like the almost like the back page here for like Jacob Phillips, but they don't put him on the front of the book? Like, you find that weird?
No, maybe they felt weird. Like, they're going to be like, boy, how'd he get that job? You know?
I mean, it could be that too, but in an era of like creators and everything, don't you think his name should be on the book?
It is, you said. I mean, it's in the book.
It's in the back of the book. I don't know. I just, by now, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is.
Besides, I thought you were punishing these people for not putting out floppies.
I was going to get to that. It's been years since I've read one of these. And apparently, I'm the only one. Like, apparently, their sales go through the roof, and everyone buys the OGNs, the GNs, the collections, everything. And I'm like, no, I fell off. I'm like, it's hard to keep up with this stuff. But this was a done-in-one. And it was also, like, available at that moment. And apparently it was an exclusive. I don't know how exclusive it really was or what's exclusive about this version. But that's what the wrap on this thing said. It said exclusive. And I was just like, okay, sure.
So we've got a hard-boiled crime tale, I'm guessing. Soft-boiled?
Yeah. This says more about me than it says, I don't know. Maybe this says something about people when you get them to read it and it'll look into their souls, where I've heard some people describe this as one of the darkest things they've written. And then I'm just like, I don't know if it's really that dark. I'm like, I thought some of their other stuff was way darker, but maybe that's, you know, looking into me.
Well, I know that team has dabbled in horror. They've dabbled in espionage. That's why I was like, oh, is it a crime? You know, they've covered, it's not that they only do crime, but that's why I was trying to figure out.
I mean, I think it's basically they do crime. I mean, it does say it's a noir thriller. So I'm like, yeah, there is always that sort of noir element to their stuff. And it's sort of a thing where, like, if I tell you about it, tell you the whole premise and what happens, it's like I'm telling you everything about the story and also nothing about the story at the same time.
Well, I mean, the noir is, to me, meeting of the kind of the flavor and the atmosphere, less than like a plot. I mean, usually there's, you know, some femme fatale and fatalistic and that sort of thing. But for me, it's real more of what the atmosphere is when you talk about that.
I mean, you're definitely reading this for the atmosphere, I would say. Yeah, so I have the hardcover and it has the, like, that silver foil on the cover. Like, I kind of wonder, you know, sometimes in other printings of the book, then they do away with the foil or whatever special things they put on here. Like, I could see that happening.
Well, did you like it, Kevin? I guess that's the big, how does it match up with their other? You've read a fair amount of Brubaker Phillips at this point.
See, it kind of runs into the situation. I'm like, yeah, it's a solo, so it's easy to jump in, but it's also a solo. I mean, if a series isn't continuing, then it's, unless it's really good or there's something weird about it, like
the Archie one.
It doesn't stick with you. Like, it just doesn't, it doesn't rent that space in your head. Like, I'm thinking with Reckless, they had 5 graphic novels. So I'm sure if I was to, like, read those, like, that's 5 times. So it has a chance to stick in there. And this can even happen with, like, series, like Umbrella Academy. If I would have read that as a monthly, you visit the material 6 times. But if you read it as a trade paperback, you visit it once. So it only sticks in your head that once. I don't know if that's just a problem that I have or a problem that other people
that's
have.
That's if you read it in one sitting, though. Like, I don't read a trade in one sitting.
I didn't read this in one sitting, actually. I read this over a few days.
Exactly.
Because there's these oddly spaced black pages in here, or like maybe after 16 pages. I actually counted because I wanted to know if it was like an issue break thing, but no, it's just, it's like random amount of pages. Like, there's a black page, and then eventually the black pages become something, but then it seems like more, it's more of a break for Sean Phillips. Where you can put some panels on the page and there's not much to draw.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with giving the guy a break. He works hard.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, one thing I gotta congratulate them on is getting these out. Like, so many times you've heard people saying they're going to graphic novels or whatever, and then they do one, or they just don't get there. They're like, oh, we're going to transition. It'll be exactly the same, and it never is. But for these guys, it definitely is the same. That being said, I don't know if I would put this up there with the best of the best or anything. Like, it's definitely an iteration on an idea. Like, he had this idea, and I don't know if he's, if Brubaker was trying to work some things out. Like, he had this idea in 2010 that he scribbled down, and then, well, the pandemic's going on, he's like, hey, I'm going to write this out. Like, maybe he's working through some serious stuff in the back of his head, and then he puts it down on a piece of paper. Like, you almost want it to go somewhere, but it does go somewhere. But is that really where you wanted it to go, or was it supposed to really happen, or it's just like a cool diversion for a little while?
Do you want to give a quick plot summary, or will that give it away? I mean, you said it would give it away and not give it away at the, because the atmosphere, obviously. I didn't know.
I mean, it is a guy that's been in a job a long time, and he's sort of like in the publishing industry type of thing, like a businessman, a salesman. And I guess he's kind of going through the motions. Like, he says, oh, I can do this automatically. Now, I've done this so many times. And he had, like, other desires to do other things, but then he just sort of got this job and just kept on going through it. And now he says he's, like, old, and it's like, whoa, 20 years went by. So I think he has, like, a desire to, like, live out another life and imagines what that could be, how he could do that. And he gets to experience some of that life.
Well, it seems reasonable. We all sometimes wonder about the path not taken.
Well, there's another character in here that maybe is the guy he wishes he was, and then, but that character is sort of like giving you these maybe big, or depending upon what you think of these ideas. Like, he'll just put something out there, and you're like, that's stupid. Or you'll be like, that's exactly like how life is. It's sort of like with Justified came back. And then, you know, the title character there, Raylan Gibbons, is sort of like, because someone asked him, are we going to be on time? And he's sort of like, no one's on time. You're either early or you're late. That kind of reminds me of this, too. Like, someone will just put that out there, and then you think about it for a second, and you're like, Yeah, that makes sense. So it's kind of like a bunch of notions they're exploring of stuff like that. So I don't know if you really enjoy that type of thing, going, yeah, that's how life is. Like, maybe you get more out of that. Like you're saying, if you feel like you're in a dead end job and wish you were someone else, like maybe this really strikes that chord with you.
I can see that. And that's also a common theme of, you know, people looking back on their life and wondering, oh, I could have done something else and used my talents to a better purpose.
Yeah, so this sort of goes down into some dark territory. So, I mean, that's always interesting, but it's definitely like, hey, how I can just take this small kernel and expand on it. But when you compare it to their other work, like, is it as textured and detailed and as interesting as like some old Hollywood story, like the fade out, I would say no. I enjoyed the fade out more. Or is it as crazy as Incognito, the noir superhero stuff? I'm like, no, I enjoyed Incognito more. I wouldn't say that this would have volumes and volumes of story available that you could expound on those ideas. Like, I don't know what you would do for another one. You know what I mean? It's like, it would feel a little stretched if you tried to go more into that. It's a short story, an idea.
All right. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, not everything needs to go 10 volumes.
Well, that's the thing. So I'm like, how much of this is my like solo stories, you know, not like holding up, but that don't make a strong memory for me? I mean, maybe that's the problem, right? I'm like, if it doesn't make that, like, that doesn't reach you that much, then it wasn't as good of a story. But I know a lot of other people probably say, oh, it was so good and type of thing, right? I mean, sometimes those solo things really grab me, but there's really that atmosphere, that thing. So, I don't know.
Well, it's also hard. You've read a lot of comic books. I mean, let's be
honest.
That's
the thing, yeah.
And you've read a lot from this team as well, not just in mm-hmm. general, but from Brubaker Phillips. This isn't their
first
rodeo.
And it's crazy they've been doing it for this long, too, together, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard other people say, too, oh, I'm going to hold on to that creator forever. And they inevitably go off onto some other thing for whatever
reason. Has there been a pair longer than them?
Oh, that's a good one.
I would say that at least I think of the Gru comics with Sergio and Mark.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some... Yeah, because it has to be a writer and an artist, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the pair I think of for like long-term partnership.
Yeah. I mean, if Kirkman and Adlard were to work on something else than Walking Dead... But I don't think, like what after Walking Dead, like, what does he draw? Like, what does he do? Like, he just retired on the...
I thought
Walking
he had
Dead
the,
Walking?
That vampire book.
But wasn't that, like, republished from somewhere else?
Oh, was it? I don't know. Because I thought Phil and I reviewed it.
Yeah, I think
he
did.
The vampire one for the show.
What is it again, sorry?
Vampire State Building.
Yes. Yeah, I read a bit of that. At least the first. I think there were a couple of minis, weren't there?
Yeah,
it was the one.
There were at least enough for a trade or a volume. I don't know if it was collected from someone else. It was, according to this, it was a Blaze publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was. I don't remember it well enough to say, like, oh, yeah, this is it. But I remember, oh, you know, the Walking Dead guy.
I think I only read the first issue or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, for, like, an American... creative team like that, like, I don't know, like, outside of saying, I don't know, oh, like David Lapham or something, like, you know what I mean?
Like, I just figured there was an old school team maybe or something, but
I don't think there's like a lot of modern examples of this type of thing,
so they might be the
I think it's hard stuff. Because of what's expected from the art team now is so much more. That's why I think Sergio has an unfair advantage because of his superhuman speed
and some
older guys. Because now you'd be hard-pressed from the art side to be like, yeah, this is the only thing I'm ever going to do, where the writer can still do other work and work with other people if they want.
Yeah.
So I think that's the hard.
And multiple projects at once.
Yeah. Like, I kind of wondered if digital was going to change that, but it hasn't seemed to, like, they just do other stuff rather than do more books.
Yeah.
Or then, like, fans, or they think there's an expectation that they have to do more detail, so it's not like... I mean, that's the funny thing with Sean Phillips, too. Like, I wouldn't say he's the most detailed guy out there, so he's kind of old school in that way, so... Like, he doesn't have to do all those things that maybe modern artists think they have to do, where it's like, I got to fill the background with tons of details and all this stuff. Like, he gets in there, he gets out there. But apparently the pages for this are done twice up, like on the old-fashioned, like EC size paper. So,
oh, that takes extra time.
Yeah, sure. Because I have one of his pages from Incognito, and it's smaller size. So he definitely like put in the extra lines there, the extra time, if he's like bumping up instead of going down.
Yeah, yeah, because I have some of the artwork from Ryan from the comic book history of comics and the philosophers comic and all that. And sometimes he at some point moved down to a smaller size for speed, like a slightly smaller. I just know it's a lot faster. And Jeremy, I can't remember his last name, who did the hyper detailed work. I went and saw his original art and his was very small. Because I was like, there is no way it would take him forever if he was working on, you know, even regular standard comic boards. It would just be endless. Like, the amount of ink on the page was an insane amount. And he just worked almost regular, so almost one-to-one it was practically. But yeah, crazy stuff. Well, I'm glad it, you know, glad they're still cranking them out. That's good. Well, Phil, you got anything for us?
I think I'm going to save it because us talking about it made me think, oh, it's a good Halloween backup, you know, like second thing. So I'm going to save it for that. Yeah.
Okay.
So those were the books you were telling me about that you read that were like things that I read.
Well, Dissolving Classroom. I was thinking, didn't you cover that one time?
That's funny. That's the one I haven't covered.
Oh, okay. I got it mixed up with The Drifting Classroom because yeah, Kevin guess so. Got me into manga with Drifting Classroom, which I just rebought the hardcovers, the 3 collection.
Yeah.
Because I never read the ending, and my favorite, Dragon's Head.
Yeah, the Dragon's Head was an early one, too, and I
remember my absolutely I only had, favorite.
Like, yeah, those early volumes, and it was out of print, so I would, like, buy a few volumes every time, and eventually, like, the person at the cashier is sort of like, yeah, you should probably buy more than just a few of those at a time because
it was
those
hard coming back into print. Yeah, and that so it never did, eh? That's what I was going to ask you. It never came back out in print.
I don't think so because it doesn't have that same recognition.
Oh, it's such a shame because it's such a it's my favorite still to this day. Yeah, but yeah, it was hard for me to track them all down.
Yeah, because Cat's Eye Boy, Drifting Classroom, 20th Century Boys, like all those things.
Never read those other two. Yeah, never read those other two.
I did read the 20th Century Boys one. I like that.
Yeah, because I know you like that one too. Yeah, I should pick up a book of that, eh?
And then there's even the Pluto anime coming out too.
Never heard of that one either.
Good stuff. It's like a modern Astro Boy type of thing.
All right, I've got a Kickstarter award earlier this year. It's the 75th anniversary hard print of a classic comic. Obviously, 75 years. That means we're going back in the way back. You guys know I love my old comics, but it's All Negro Comics number 1. They collected it, reprinted it, and then they also did a bunch of essays in it and modern versions of the tales. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know about this book, but it was
came
out in the 40s, only one issue. And it was all black creators, writers, artists, everybody in it. And it was, you know, sort of an attempt to be, we all unfortunately have seen some 40s comics and sort of seen how they portray some of the black people in it. And it's not great.
But is it still have that crazy golden age energy?
Oh my gosh, does it ever? Which is a mixed bag for me. As you guys know, I'm not the biggest golden age guy because of the weirdness to it. Also because of the, like, it does look very, like, they just crank these pages out without, for as big as the paper must have been on the twice up, there is not a ton of detail. Although the one thing I'm bummed about is the opening sketch, they go into a restaurant to rob it. It's a detective bit, but the prices you can't see because I'm like, whoa, I wonder what 1947 like spare ribs cost or whatever. But it's a series of stories, all the same writer, and he got a series of different artists. So sorry about that. It's Orin C. Evans, and then there's George Evans Jr., John Terrell, William H. Smith, Leonard Cooper, and Tony Washington remastered it. So it's well, the other thing that was interesting, and you find out from the back matter, there's a bunch of essays written, is that it was a 15-cent comic at a time when it was normally 10, although it does have a lot high page count. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. But the first story is Ace Harlem, who's basically a police detective, and this is one of those crime don't pay sort of stories. That being said, it's 80% six-panel grids with a couple of, you know, a few larger inserts, but two zoot suit toughs go in, rob a store and kill the guy, but their method of killing is the one guy takes his chain and wraps it around his neck and kills him that way. And then Ace shows up and investigates the scene. And you know, these, there's always like one or two clues that they find. I mean, you've read the Batman comics are the same. They're all the same. They find like, oh, I see a link of the chain, and they see a fingerprint, and then they go and follow it. I mean, part of it is I like the crazy energy, but there's still that oftentimes where they're kind of describing what's happening. But this is very much in that crime doesn't pay. And there are some beautiful panels. There's one, it's a half-page splash where the two bad guys are in their zoot suits with round sunglasses and hats, and their shadows are against a brick wall. And it's very cool. And they get to fighting, because you know in these books the bad guys always fight amongst each other, so the one guy chokes the other guy with his chain and kills him. Meanwhile, Ace Harlem has tracked him down, and when the guy goes to track Ace, he dodges, spins around, and then the rickety stairwell gives way, and the killer's chain wraps around his neck and gets caught, and so he hangs himself by his own chain. Very golden age goofy, you know, that's basically, I think, the longest story. But that kind of, if you like those detective ones where there's not going to be that many red herrings or a lot of clues, they kind of feed it to you, that's what you get. But the next piece, my least favorite, it's Doodillies, and they're those big-headed Cupid characters. I don't know if you, there's a something in the newspaper called Love Is Here. And it's the same kind of thing where the characters have extra large heads and they're kind of naked, but you don't see anything and they have little wings. And it's that kind of cutesy aesthetic where they kind of wander around and they see things in the wild, but they describe it in a funny, childlike way. It's just, it's well done. It's just not my jam. Like, it's that kind of little kid stuff that, I don't know. I always felt like those kind of comics, I never liked them as a kid, because I felt they sort of pandered a little bit. And also you felt, you know, you didn't want to be like, I don't want to read baby comics. I want to read like important ones.
Important ones.
You know, ones that have real things happening and people fighting. Yeah. I will admit, like I do with most Golden Age books, I skip the 2-page text piece. I never find them interesting. I was
wondering if one of those things would give you like more info on like, what they were doing at the time or what they became.
I read the text pieces in the back. I meant the Golden Age books up through even the Silver Age oftentimes had a 2-page text piece because that allowed them
like,
the postal
rate. Like a story type of thing?
Yeah, they put a story.
Oh, okay.
Most famously, Stan Lee's first printed work in a comic book is a 2-page Captain America story. So if you, for so whatever reason, postal regulation, all these books always have like at least 1 2-page story that makes it something else. I never find them interesting. I mean, I'm sure there's some, but, you know, it's like a 2-page text story in a comic book. Not. The next one is Lion Man, who's a American scientist, Superman type, sent over to the to Africa to watch over a mountain of uranium to make sure no one gets it. But the weird thing is, he has the kid sidekick, a lost orphan, Zulu Hotfoot, and I hate those dumb, you know, the kid's always goofing up that gets him in trouble. And then he has to spank him and all that. And they just always seem...
Oh, does he have to spank him?
Well, maybe he doesn't have to, but that's the tradition of these. I'll stomp his conch until it rings like a bell. But, you know, he's trying to help or get into mischief, and it always screws up. And then his bad guy is Dr. Blut Sangro, an evil figure, and his guide, Brosser the Beachcomber. So they're there to steal the uranium. And they get the jump on Lion Man thanks to his sidekick. But Lion Man trips him and gets the jump back at him. But his sidekick ends up screwing up so the bad guys get away. I mean, this was all set up to be an ongoing comic, and it didn't. They also have a one-page of regular one-panel gag strips about elaborate fashion. And it looks really cool. Like, red and green dresses with fancy hats. One of them I actually even laughed at. And that's rare for me. And then a one-page gag strip about a henpecked husband. Again, this is all, you know, it's 1947, so. And then the last bit was about these two kind of con men tramp types that go around. And in this one, they find their way to a guy's house, and he has a really cute wife, and they pretend they're musicians to get some food out of him. And he's always complimenting the wife, whose name is Ample. So he's like, oh, you're so hot. And she says, no, my name is Ample. Like that kind of gag.
Mm-hmm.
But they screw it up and end up getting kicked out. And then there's an important message that crime doesn't pay, kids. Stick to the church. Use up your energy in good, clean sports. I like that. And then that's the end of it with the back page promising the return of these characters. But it never happened. Then we have the essays. And then they did reboots of all the characters, but in a modern style. And I was kind of hoping they would actually redo them from an art style of the old school, but modern storytelling.
Yeah.
But instead, it's modern. It's just these characters in them, which is fine. Like, they're not doing it. And it's all of them, like the gag strip, the henpecked husband. Again, some of these I liked. I like crazy fashions, and it's so colorful. Like, it really is good. And mercifully, the doo-dillies is only a two-pager, because I'm like, oh, good. I didn't like them. But they put a two-page text piece in here, because it was a whole redoing of it. So this came out as a Kickstarter. I just thought it was pretty cool. I'm like, what a fun way. I'd heard about this comic, but I never... Obviously, I'm sure copies of this are expensive as heck.
I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to get my hands on one, but it was just a fun, you know, fun Kickstarter to get.
There's a lot of, I noticed, like, reprints of old series and stuff coming out on Kickstarter. Not that old, but like, I never read this, but Poison Elves I've always seen around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
like, it came out recently on that.
I'm a big fan of
this. Is that
any
good, Poison Elf? Like, is that something I want?
I remember it being, like, in kind of in that Crow family of, like, angsty, gothy kind of comics. Okay. So if you like that.
Like, I feel like that's one of those things that would have showed up in Wizard and be like, hey, look what's going on in the indie scene.
Mm-hmm. Like, I've always seen Poison Elf, but I've never, like, read one or opened one or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's one of those more famous,
I also
like, underground indie books.
Didn't that guy pass away kind of young?
He
too?
Did.
So yeah,
he
sad
about it. He did, yeah.
Like, that's always a downer, but... But yeah, I think I'll. I think that's a good, just a little primer episode, keeping us back on track. Hopefully, we'll get the full crew in next time and treat everybody up. But thanks for listening, everybody. Kevin, I can't remember if you're using catchphrases anymore.
Well, I'm not using catchphrases anymore. I don't. It's usually about you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.